We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Scott just reminded me that the Yankees won the series. Guess what, Scott? I don't give a shit. My first question to you is, does this feel like a first-place team? Because I was talking to my dad, all right? I was talking to my dad yesterday. And through the first 2 weeks of the season where the Yankees had like a 10-2 record, 10-3 record, nothing from them. Barely a text message about the Yankees.
This is par for the course. This is exactly how I would expect your family to act on that side.
Over the past week, really call it the Toronto and the Tampa series, which you're right. They did win the Tampa series. So when you look at it from the two series combined, they're even. They're 500 on the last week. So things could be much worse. But his question was, and I do agree with him, that he said, does this feel like a first place team? And my answer is no, they're not playing like a first place team. I know they're in first place largely because of the hot start, but other than Juan Soto, this team is not playing like a first place team. So like, I wanted to get your thoughts there.
What about Nestor Cortes? Is Nestor Cortes giving you first place vibes? Because his last two outings have been fantastic. Going deep into the game, striking out, getting double plays, being efficient.
Sure.
He's actually been a big rebound guy that I wasn't expecting to fully rebound, and he's been really, really good so far.
Yeah, other than I think his first start – or no, it was his first start against Houston. I think he struggled through – or he, like, he grinded through five innings. There was one start in there where he struggled. I forget who it came against, probably against Arizona.
Yeah, he had a struggle. Yep.
But yeah, for the most part, his last couple outings have been really good, and Luis Hill was fantastic yesterday. Like, completely different pitcher from the Toronto outing versus the outing against Tampa.
And I guess go back more talking the whole series, lineup. The whole series, really the starting pitching was good. Clark Schmidt, I thought, was good as well. And, you know, had that streak of what, like five or six guys that he struck out in a row.
Mm-hmm. And he needed the strikeouts too, because at that point in the game, he was having runners on third base with less than two outs. Like he struck out five in a row and he needed those five strikeouts to not give up runs.
Yeah. And, you know, if you go back to Friday night, that seventh inning was probably one of the most exciting innings that I have seen in a long time. And I know that the Yankees, here's what happened twice with the Yankees and this series. The Rays gave them opportunities for with mistakes or walks. The walks happened yesterday. And on Friday, there were a couple errors that kind of set up the Yankees. Mm-hmm. But what they've been doing is they've been making them pay for these mistakes, which I absolutely love. And that Juan Soto home run was one of the, I don't know what, it got me.
That's made the me high feel, point of the season.
It
so
made
far.
Me feel different. It made me feel different. It was a violent swing. It was exciting. There was just absolutely no doubt about it. He destroyed the ball, and it came in a flurry of activity for the Yankees, right? Like the two errors that happened, and then they made them pay for it, and they took the lead. It was a 5-1 at that point, so they had come back, tied the game, and then Soto put them over. And that swing alone, man, was just, it was fantastic. It was awesome. It was like, that is the epitome of Juan Soto, and a guy that you see who is a superstar in the league come to New York and absolutely thrive in this setting. A guy that he looks like he was built to play in the Bronx and made to play in the Bronx with that swing and that seventh inning. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah, like I said, it for me it was the most exciting single play of the season so far. And if you want to rank a second, I guess Juan Soto throwing the guy out at home plate on opening day in Houston is a second. Oh, you want a third? I don't know. Pick another Juan Soto moment, because he's basically been the team so far this year.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the addition of Juan Soto cannot be under emphasized in how and the impact on everything that this season has, because I know we pull up runners in scoring position numbers and he had some gaudy ones that they flashed on the screen last week, but they're ridiculous. The guy up in any type of pressure situation with runners on, when there's an opportunity to do something, he's taking advantage of it over 50% of the time. It's crazy.
So his career batting average is somewhere in like the 270s, I believe. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but it's like in the high 270s range. And obviously right now he's hitting 330, 340, whatever. And then with runners in scoring position, he's been otherworldly, right? Just general with runners in scoring position, 9 for 17, which is a 529 batting average. His OPS in those spots is 1700, 1.727. And then with two outs and runners in scoring position, he's been even better. With a 545 average and a 1800 OPS. Like, the numbers are hard to read because you don't usually see numbers that high for the OPS. Okay, so he has at the plate done everything humanly possible that he could to start his Yankees career, and usually when that happens, the good thing is for a player, you know, playing for the Yankees the first time, playing in New York for the first time, if you get off to a hot start, when you inevitably go through a slump, because every baseball player goes through a slump, the fans are patient. Whereas if your slump comes early and it's the first thing that they see, then the fans are not patient. So what Juan Soto has also done with this start is, if he goes into a June slump, a July slump, whatever, fans are just going to be like, okay, cool, he'll get over it and turn back into the player that we know he can be.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, they were talking about something that was interesting the other day, and you know, I know, kind of going out of order here, but to get into some things with Judge's struggles, I thought it was an interesting point. I forget who was talking about it. Maybe it was just Kay, but you know, what about the opportunity with Soto being in such a heater the way he is, with Judge not, you know, obviously starting the season off well, and just for whatever reason can't. He just looks uncomfortable. He just doesn't look like he's got the control of the strike zone. Doesn't look like he has the control of his swing right now. But swapping them in the order so that you're giving Soto some protection.
Kay was talking about this yesterday.
Okay. And I think it's an interesting thing.
No,
and
I don't like it.
Here's what I don't like. I don't like when we're too precious about the order of the lineup, right? If you were to do something like this, it's actually for a reason. There's an actual reason why you would do this. You're giving Judge the potentially more looks in the strike zone. Obviously they don't want to walk him. They don't want it. With Judge struggling, they're more apt to go after him in the strike zone than put him on and have Soto up with runners on. So
I don't think
it hurts, and I think it's, people are just too precious about the lineup people.
Okay, on the flip side, do you really think Judge is struggling because he's hitting third and not second?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that there's the people that are behind Judge. The pitchers have no problem attacking him off the plate. They're basically, the pitchers are doing what they want to do with Aaron Judge right now. If you have a guy like Juan Soto behind him, they can't really do what they want to do necessarily because of the guy behind him.
I don't think that's why Aaron Judge is struggling. I mean, he's been completely lost at the plate, taking fastballs in good hitters counts in the middle of the plate.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you.
This is
like a type of thing to just spark someone or just give an opportunity. Even if it's one or two more pitches that you're seeing that look a little bit better, it might be the opportunity. I think things like this is the type of thing that I think a manager can absolutely defend and just talk to his guys, be like, hey, just want to mix it up a little bit. Not a big deal. Switching you two, first and second and third in the lineup, just to see if we can't get, you know, a couple more looks for Judge. And I think that is the thing that is lost with the everyday active manager, that those types of moves are just not made very often anymore because of the lineup's got to stay the way that the lineup is. And frankly, like, I don't know why a minor shakeup like that just can't be done by the manager without, you know, having to defend it in such a way. I think it's just trying something new to get a guy going. And I think that's a good thing.
The Yankees have already shaken up their lineup, though. Volpe moved up to the leadoff spot after 2 weeks.
Yeah, but I'm talking about Judge rotated. Specifically.
The only guys in the lineup they haven't moved are Soto 2, Judge 3. Everyone else has been rotating around spots. We've seen Stanton and Rizzo flip-flop between cleanup and the fifth spot. We saw Glaber at the leadoff spot to start down to the sixth spot.
But there's only two guys cemented in the lineup right now.
There's two guys cemented in the lineup.
I understand what you're saying, but there's only two guys that are cemented.
Do you think Judge will turn it around?
100%.
Do you think he is capable of turning it around hitting third?
Yeah, I do. But I think
about previous. Let me finish asking my series of questions. Think about previous seasons, 2022, 2023. Who was protecting Judge in the lineup?
Yeah, no, I get it.
Nobody.
There was not much. Yeah.
And he was still the Yankees' best offensive player, MVP of the league, best hitter in the American League. Okay. So he is capable of doing damage with no one hitting behind him. And this year, we've even seen Stanton look way better this year than he has in previous years. So if you want to call. If you want to say who's protecting Judge, Stanton has been pretty decent protection of Judge so far this year.
I don't think any pitcher is going in there thinking that I got to give Aaron Judge more balls over the plate because Stanton's behind him. I don't think that's a mentality that anybody's thinking.
But it's not someone hitting, or Judge is the guy hitting 180 right now. Okay. And we saw Stanton hitting 180 behind Judge in the previous few years. So
yeah.
there was maybe it's not like a massive thought in the pitcher's head, but it's not a non-thought anymore.
Yeah. If we have to, we're waiting for him to turn it around. And I think everybody is pretty much on the same page. I haven't heard too much of like concern for Judge at this point. It's more of like, okay, well, when, and the longer that goes, the more,
sure.
You know, doubt that will creep into your mind. So that's why I'm like, you know what, just trying something that will potentially catalyst, you know, even if it's just a different mentality for you going in there, hitting second and third, it's just a mental shakeup. I don't think it's a bad thing. Do I think it would matter to Soto? I don't think it would matter to Soto at all. So that's all. I'm just saying a little shakeup. I think, you know, having a feel for something and a manager being able to move around a guy that's a superstar because he believes it's the best thing that can get him going. I don't think it's a bad thing.
I'm actually, the more I'm thinking about it, the more I don't like it, because I really like Soto hitting second and having a lefty. So you go righty, lefty, righty, because even if Volpe doesn't stay in the leadoff spot, it's likely either going to be Glaber back in the leadoff spot or LeMahieu when he comes back. So no matter what, there's going to be a right-handed hitter hitting leadoff. So
eventually it'll be LeMahieu if
Volpe
don't see...
continues to struggle. I agree.
Yes.
But so then you can stick with that righty, lefty, righty combination, which is definitely important for later in games when you've got guys coming out of the bullpen. Okay. And also I think, even though Soto is hitting ahead of Judge, he is still, in essence, providing protection for Judge in the sense that he's always freaking on base. So it's not like you can just pitch around Judge, because then you're putting multiple guys on base. Soto's always on base ahead of Judge. So
yeah.
Eventually I think Judge is going to turn it around and start to make
I
those
agree.
Pitchers
I don't. I am not
punish those pitchers.
I'm just not concerned about Aaron Judge. I've seen too much of him to understand that he's a very good hitter.
Yeah.
And that he does on occasion go through these slumps where his swing looks long. He's opening his hips up early. Like he just looks like he's not timing anything correctly. And when you see that with him, you start to see the outside of the plate get peppered, and just outside it, you know, 2 to 3 inches off the plate is where they're living right now. And until he can prove that either he's hitting the ball, fouling it off, you know, laying off of that pitch, they're going to continue to do that, and they're going to be off the plate for him. So, you know, he's getting fooled by some of these fastballs because he's almost anticipating something else, and that's a problem. So I think that's the biggest deal, is like him being able to control that strike zone a little bit more. And if there's something, all I'm saying is, if there's a little something that you can nudge that'll help the ball go over the plate a little bit more to get him out of that funk so that he can see it, I'm for it. And you know, I don't think it's going to happen, but I don't think it's a serious thing in the grand scheme of things.
The ninth inning at bat on Saturday when he struck out in the ninth inning was, I think, a microcosm for how much he's struggling. It's one of the worst at bats he's had, where first two strikes are just check swings where he's unsure if he should be swinging or not, and check swing strikes. I think he fouled off a pitch or maybe took a pitch, and then he waved at a breaking ball for strike three. It was a four pitch strikeout, non-competitive at bat. This is after Juan Soto flew out to the left field wall in the ninth inning, and that was a nothing game at that point. So of course you're like, oh, hopefully someone hits a solo home run. But the offense to that point, other than the seventh inning on Friday when like you said, Tampa helped him out to score a couple runs, had really done nothing against the Rays pitching. And but yeah, that was an awful at bat. Did you see Boone's press conference, or not the whole press conference, but I think Yes showed a clip of it, of one of the reporters asking about Judge's struggles? Did you see Boone's reaction to that?
I did not see his reaction to it, but I bet I could predict what it is.
What do you think he said?
He's not concerned in the least bit, and it's maybe talked about spring training at bats potentially.
He didn't actually. But he just
I have a feeling if I were to completely predict it, it's him just making it a complete non-issue, which yes. I agree with.
He laughed, he chuckled, and said not worried. And it was like that was it.
Yeah.
So that's why I also don't know that he's going to shuffle him around in the lineup. I mean, could it
happen? No, he's not. Sure. He's not going to. I'm not saying that he's going to, because he's not. He's not going to. I'm saying I would be. I wish that it were more than a thought, because you know something like that could be. It just isn't done in Boone's Yankees. It's just not.
Yeah. I mean, yes and no. I think it's not done for
not
someone,
for guys like Judge.
Yeah, not done. Not for someone like Judge, because I do think that I do believe Judge will turn it around. I feel like the talent is too good to not turn it around. And you just got to.
He's going to turn it around.
Yes.
It's still April. Like, the guy is there. And he did have, you know, did not finish spring training. He was.
That
he was
I'm also limited. Annoyed with, by the way.
Well, it is part of the story.
But it shouldn't be the story anymore, because Meredith was talking about this yesterday on her little segment during the broadcast. She's like, oh, Judge only had 20 something at bats during spring training. And then in 2023, he had this many. In 2022, he had this many. But at this point, how many at bats does Judge have on the season? Like, shouldn't he have more than enough at bats to get his timing right? But by
yes,
this point,
he should. He should. And it's, for whatever reason, the feel is just not there. And that's it. It's a feel thing for him. And I do think he's out of sync a little bit with his mechanics. And I think that's a part. You look yesterday and you watch some of those pitches that he was missing. His hips are definitely open. He's not staying back like he normally does and through the ball. Because when he's right, he's able to put that ball down the right field line, because he's staying back and his bat is coming through the zone at a much longer clip. And right now he's clearing his hips early is what I've been seeing, and just been out front. And that makes you completely susceptible to the outside pitch. And that's exactly where they're throwing him.
Yeah. Actually, Logan, can you look up Judge's spray chart this year? Cause I would venture to guess he does not have many balls hit to the opposite field or even to center field. His season stats on the year, 183 batting average and 82 at bats. He's got a 674 OPS, which I would also venture to guess is probably the worst OPS. This is probably the worst stretch of his career outside of 2016 when he first came up. Once 2017 came around, this is probably the worst stretch of Judge's career.
I agree. I think it's probably right there, because again, like the way that he looks in eye test, he just doesn't look comfortable. That's it. And even that ball the other night when he hit the double down the line, like he's pulling that ball down the line on the ground.
Yeah.
That's just not something you normally see from him. And to me, that's like he's again, clearing early, opening up early, and the ball is going down the left field line because he's making contact with it. Pitcher,
and he hit the ball hard. Like, that was a hard hit ball.
Well, anytime he's hitting it to the left side, he's going to hit the ball hard. But again, like we're so used to seeing Judge being able to go with pitches and you know, hit line drives out to right field as well and in the gap. And just not seeing that as much.
All right. While Logan's looking up the spray chart, I got to tell you guys about Game Time. The Yankees are playing Oakland at the stadium this week, and there are a ton of great tickets available on the Game Time app. Monday is a 1 o'clock game, so you got to move quickly. I don't know. Is there any like solar vortex today that's going to cause the game to be delayed? Who the hell knows? Game Time is now an authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball, meaning buying tickets to a baseball game on Game Time is faster and easier than ever. The Game Time app has so many great features. I love the flash deals because you can see what sections the best deals are in. The all-in pricing makes it so there are no surprise fees at checkout. And the seat views mean you can see real pictures from inside the venue so you can make an informed purchase. Game Time is the fastest and easiest way to buy tickets to sporting events, but you can also find tickets to concerts, comedy shows, theaters, and much more. As I said, back in January for my wife's birthday, I got some theater tickets on Game Time. So you can do that as well. The Game Time guarantee means you'll always get the best price. If you find tickets in the same section and the same row for less money, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use code Bronx for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code BRONX, that spells Bronx, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Do we have a spray chart, Logan? You did put it in here. Okay, so 2024 hits. So he does have a couple balls to right field, but there's certainly most of his hits. Man, doesn't have a lot of hits. Most of his hits are to the left side of the field, and I think that just like kind of goes to your point of pulling off the ball, opening up, and just not being comfortable with the plate, because his approach is middle of the field approach, like the cliche. He hits so many balls to right field. He hits so many home runs to right field. Honestly. So I don't know. It's not look good.
It's interesting though, cause he's actually pulling the ball less than he has in previous years.
But pulling the ball for hits less or just pulling the ball in general?
Pulling the ball
all contact.
I believe that's all contact. But if you look at his batted ball spray, sorry, look at how many like ground balls to shortstop.
Yeah. That's
the key, because his fly ball, I mean, he's hit one fly ball to left field.
Well, he's hit two home runs right. To left field.
But look at, if you look at his batted balls, he's got one fly ball to left field. All his other fly balls are to right field.
Ground balls to the left side of the infield, all that says is you're pulling off the pitches and you're yanking balls on the outside plate to the shortstop.
Yeah, if you look at his hits, I mean, the batted balls are one thing, but that doesn't mean it's good contact at all.
Right. No,
to me,
that doesn't say
A ton. Everything on the hit side really does go to the pole, so it does give notion to the fact that he's coming off the ball, and if he's making weak contact to the right side, and getting, you know, the success on the left side with the stuff that he's making contact and it's actually falling for a hit, that's it. Like, pitcher probably makes a mistake, he's able to make them pay for it, but anything on the outside of the plate, he's not hitting.
And when Judge is going right, I think just intuitively, as I'm watching pitchers attack Judge, they crowd him inside because they do not want to let him get his arms extended and hit the ball hard to the opposite field, because it's going to be a home run. If you leave a ball over the plate against Judge, he's going to punish you to center field or right field.
Yeah. Not right now.
Not right now.
Right. Not right now.
All right. So we briefly mentioned LeMahieu, who Last week, they said he had an MRI taken and showed a lack of healing, and doctors were not comfortable with him beginning a rehab assignment. But then Boone said he hopes he's going to start a rehab assignment Tuesday, and it seems like he will start the rehab assignment on Tuesday with the Somerset Patriots. I'm a little confused.
I don't understand how on Friday. I don't understand how on Friday doctors look at an MRI and say it's not healing, so we're not going to start. But then Tuesday we're starting.
But I don't know how you can say on Friday when he's not ready to start a rehab assignment that he's definitely going to be ready to start a rehab assignment on Tuesday.
After looking at the MRI saying that it's not healing.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
So
we expect him not to start on Tuesday, or the fact that they said it's not healing the way that they want it to something's inaccurate.
Something is weird here, because if it seems like he's going to play a rehab assignment on Tuesday. But if you're telling me Friday showed the MRI is not healing, then why is he playing on Tuesday? It just magically healed in the last 3 days?
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't know what 3 days does after he's been out for, you know, a month.
If you're saying we're going to take more imaging next week on Tuesday, okay, I get that.
But... Well, they don't need more imaging. When they take the imaging, they have it. So, it, you know.
No, but to see if it's healed.
In 3 days?
Again, yeah.
What are we doing?
What if it's 97% healed? They're like, 3 more days, this is going to be 100%.
Yeah, it's like being able to decipher what's a fastball and what's a changeup. I need that percentage point to go up one notch so that I can feel good about saying it's healing the way I want it to heal.
All right, so if you had to bet, is he going to start a rehab assignment this week?
I don't know who's... It's like, who's... It's like, where's the lie? It's like, you know what I mean? Like you have a lineup of people. One person's telling the truth. Four of them are telling you a thing that's not true. You have to identify who's the one telling you the truth. I don't know. It sounds like he's playing in Somerset on Tuesday. So I got to believe that, you know, whoever made the comments about it not healing on Friday, maybe that was overstated in the sense that, you know, we would have liked it to heal.
The Mayhew said that.
Okay, so he's then repeating something that had been said maybe. So yeah, so my money's on Tuesday. My money's on Tuesday.
And LeMahieu shouldn't have said that or wasn't accurate, wasn't true with what he was saying.
He probably missed some information in there, and that's fine. He's the one that just needs to know how it feels, not what it looks like. I don't care if he's looking at the imaging at all. I just want him to know how it feels.
Well,
you got a little scare with Glaber fouling the ball off his foot too, because it looked very similar in that sense.
And then he
looked like he was in pain, dude.
Exactly. This is classic Glaber. Okay.
This is also classic for, hey, MRI came today and Glaber not in the lineup.
Is he not in the lineup already?
No, I'm just saying like that's
but he stayed in the game and was perfectly fine. Like But 5 minutes later, it was as if it didn't happen.
Yeah. And, you know,
do you know how he reacted? Like my 3-year-old son reacts whenever he falls. It's the end of the world, crying, screaming. 35 seconds later, it's like it never happened.
He did foul a ball off of his foot, though, or off of his leg.
And do you think that really hurt? Or do you think that maybe he was looking for a little sympathy? Because he's
I think
child.
It really hurt. I think that hurts. And when you hit a bone like that, the pain starts to go away. And then it gets stiff. And then you got to figure out what's going on.
You remember in the NBA finals, the Celtics versus the Lakers way back when Paul Pierce was carted off of the court in a wheelchair. And then 20 minutes later, he comes back and he's draining threes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's Glaber.
I think what happens,
except not draining threes, like making errors.
In those cases that, you know, they're just making sure there's no structural damage and it just becomes a pain tolerance thing. And then they're fine.
Well,
I don't know if they made that assessment on the field with Glaber in that moment, but you know,
Glaber did not play on, that was Saturday's game that he did not play. Jones is in there a second. So you've got another weird sort of back-to-back-to-back day games that doesn't normally happen because you got a Monday afternoon game that's atypical. Mm-hmm. So with the foul ball off yesterday, it would not surprise me if Glaber gets the day off today.
So, yeah, against Oakland.
Yeah. What do you say? Yeah.
Or the A's. Sorry. The A's. I'm just saying it's one of those games that you could probably we're giving another opportunity for Jones to get the first hit of the season, you know, against the A's.
Does Trent Grisham have a hit yet?
The A's of Sacramento. No, both Grisham and Jones hitless on the season.
I I just want to point out, if you're out there, and when the Yankees made the Juan Soto trade, if you spent any time talking about Trent Grisham and how this was a great additional pickup and you were excited for Trent Grisham, like, come on. Like, this is...
I went the complete opposite way, and I said, I do not want Trent Grisham. Ilya probably remembers this. I did not want Trent Grisham because if you go back and look at his offensive numbers, they're pretty telling for what we've seen so far. He's a bad offensive player. So if we're talking about him as the, you know, fourth, fifth outfielder that can come in and play defense, sure, no problem. But I'm not expecting and never have expected anything offensively from the last guy on the bench. That's just been my mentality.
Aren't we hoping that when Dominguez comes back that he's not even on the roster? Like, isn't that the plan?
I don't know what they're going to do, but yeah, there's going to be a consideration there for sure.
I mean, if he's this, and obviously maybe he'll have a hit by then, but if he's this and Verdugo, who's looked okay at times.
Verdugo's been looking good. You know, I think he came out of the gate a little slow, and now we're seeing a much better, you know, acquisition at this point. I think he's doing the right things. He's playing good defense. His offense is picked up.
Three hits yesterday. Big two-out RBI hit with the bases loaded. That was actually probably the key hit of the inning was Verdugo's hit on Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, they just came out, and when Savale, he had nothing, and it was just first pitch. And they let it rain on him until he had to get knocked out. So it was good. They attacked it. Obviously, I love seeing that too. When you see three batters go up there and punish the guy on the very first pitch, there's obviously a big tell. Like, the guy's tired, yes. The ball's not moving, and the batters know it, and they're like, jump on him early, and that's exactly what they did, and served, you know, three base hits for that turned into a extremely good rally and knocked him out of the game.
If those balls are popped up or even hit hard, but at someone, everyone's screaming, take a pitch. What are you doing? It's so hypocritical. So we talked about LeMahieu coming back and potentially replacing Volpe at the leadoff spot, because the last seven games, Anthony Volpe has just looked horrible at the plate. He's hitting 172, 5-for-29, no home runs, two RBIs. He did have a hit on yesterday. He had an RBI hit, 9 strikeouts in that time, a 200 on base percentage. But the thing that is really alarming is the chase rate. So we have a chart here that goes, and I got to zoom in because my eyesight is dog shit and this chart is too small. I still cannot read that. So his chase rate, since the Toronto series, so the last week of games, has gone up from this is too small. His chase rate went from like under 20% to up above 40%, peaking over the weekend at over 60%. And there was an at bat, I think it was the first at bat on yesterday's game, where he struck out on three pitches, or maybe that was Saturday's game, I can't remember, but he struck out on three pitches, and the two swinging strikes were balls out of the zone, just no chance.
Yeah, he's looked lost. He's lost the strike zone. That's a big deal, obviously, when you're giving more off the plate. Your confidence in what a strike is and what it's not is completely gone. And early in the season, what we saw was he was being very selective. He was looking for his pitch. He was, you know, being flat through the zone, and he wasn't really giving up anything. And that's a big deal for him. Obviously, his pitch selection and him swinging at the balls over the plate, and specifically the ones that he's looking for to really, you know, pick some more out, is a big deal, and he's getting fooled. And I think when he gets mechanically off a little bit, that's when you start seeing him, flail at balls again outside the zone. He's been having a hard time. And I don't know what the numbers say. Just as my eye test saying that the off speed stuff, he's been getting fooled a lot. Kikuchi was destroying him with that slider in. He got you know, this weekend hit a few times with the curveball, or you know, breaking pitch on his hands. And that's where I've seen him struggle. He's not picking it up early enough to lay off of it. And he's putting bad swings on those balls.
Because he's in swing mode. He goes to the plate and he's in swing mode, and no matter what comes up there, he's swinging, and pitchers can identify that. And when a hitter's in swing mode, you can destroy them with off speed stuff.
Yeah. And that's exactly what's happening with him. Yeah. And because of that, you're seeing the expansion of the zone because those balls that look like they're in the meat of the plate when he's identifying them are, you know, falling off the plate, not coming close. And if he's taking that pitch, it's a clear ball. So it's a matter of him, I think, also being able to identify some of these pitches earlier, you know, as the pitcher is throwing the ball. And for whatever reason, you know, he's hit that skid. So this is like the next evolution of Anthony Volpe,
because last year we didn't want to happen though. We were like, last year he did that. Of course he's not going to hit 450 all year, but don't go hit 100 after you hit 400, right? Yeah. Like find some consistency. Yes, you're going to go through struggles, but find some consistency. Don't be an automatic out for 30 at bats after you couldn't after a pitcher couldn't get you out for the first 2 weeks. Like, I don't understand. I don't know what to make of him as a player. And I don't know. You cannot judge anything on him, not only in his career, but especially this season with how wild these swings have been.
Yeah, that's the next step for him is, you know, one, believing in this new swing and being able to identify these pitches so that these sustained slumps don't happen and you're able to kind of weather the storm a bit. That said, guys are going to go through slumps and guys are going to go through torrid hot streaks and we're kind of seeing the polar opposites of how at-bats can and are with him right now. So
I also want to bring up a situation. Inning, it was Saturday. He tried to bunt up the first baseline. That was Saturday, right? And I'm trying to find the inning in the situation. There was a runner on first base. And I think there was one out or no outs. I don't remember the exact situation. I can't find it on the app, but like that is evident that he has no comfort at the plate right now. And he's trying to bunt in a situation that does not warrant a bunt. Like, what are you trying to bunt a runner over to second base in that spot? It just doesn't make any sense.
I mean, to me, that is exactly what happens with a guy like him that says, you know what? I'm still fast. If I could just bunt this ball and I'm not helping the team right now with my at-bats. So me bunting the ball.
Why are you bunting it up the first base line though? There's a runner on first base. So the first base.
Usually when you bunt it up first base line, you're trying to bunt for a base hit.
But not with a runner on first base, because the first baseman is holding the runner on, so he's in. If there's nobody on base, you can do that because the first baseman is playing back. But when the first baseman is playing in line with the bag...
No, because if you can hit the ball to the first baseman and you actually get him to field the ball, you have a great opportunity to get on base, especially with his speed. If you bunt it up the first base line and it goes past the pitcher, which is what you're trying to do, and you're trying to get the first baseman to field it, then it's basically a race between you and the pitcher to first base, and Volpe's going to win that race. So he was bunting for a base hit.
Not when the first baseman's in. When the first baseman is back.
Again, it depends on where you're putting that bunt. So, yeah.
It's harder to get it in between the pitcher and the first baseman when the first baseman is in. When the first baseman is back, there's a gap there. You can get it through the pitcher. Then the first baseman runs in.
He fields it.
The pitcher's going this way. When the first baseman is in, he fields it, and he's right there. He has time to get over to the bag. It's a stupid play.
I think what happens here, and this is just purely about Volpe's confidence and where he thinks he can contribute.
Yes.
That's it. Sometimes a guy, when they're trying to bunt the ball, it helps them see the ball a little bit better. Sometimes guys will bunt it just to see the ball. That's why you used to see when people are taking batting practice, they're bunting the first few so that they're watching the ball hit the bat.
Don't do that anymore. They don't take.
I don't think they do that anymore, but that used to be a thing. And it just allows you to see the ball hit the bat. Just makes you, you know, get in the zone a little bit more. That's what he was doing.
That bunt was the hardest exit velocity he had all weekend?
There's no way that's accurate.
It's probably up there because his hit was a bloop. It was like a broken bat bloop. So it was probably just about the same if I had to take a guess. Let's talk about Luis Gil, who we mentioned looked excellent yesterday. It was his best start of the year. 5 2/3 innings, no runs, 97 pitches, 2 hits allowed. The biggest difference for me was his fastball command, which you pointed out, but also he was in pitcher counts and not in hitter counts. If you rewind to that Toronto series, he started out every hitter with a ball. Everything was a 1-0 count, a 2-1 count, a 3-1 count. He was in horrible pitcher counts. It was complete opposite yesterday against Tampa. And you could see then when he's in a pitcher count, his stuff overpowers hitters.
It's about commanding the fastball. Everything is about commanding the fastball for him. And the reason he's in pitcher's counts is because he's commanding the fastball early in the count. And if he's not doing that, and which is exactly what we saw when he was playing Toronto, he was there was late movement on his fastball that was just jumping out of the zone. It was starting in the zone and jumping out of the zone practically every time. And he was falling behind. And you're right. When he starts falling behind, it's not good. He's got to work ahead in the count. He's got to be able to command the fastball. He had, you know, I thought one of his best pitches of the night was, I think it was in the second inning when he struck out the Tampa hitter. It was a dot on the outside corner, low in the zone. It was beautiful. And when you think of Heel and his fastball, you think of a fastball up in the zone that's 9,900 miles per hour. That's hard to hit because it's hard to catch up in the zone with movement, that coming in that hot. But when he's able to dot something low in the zone on the outside corner, that just makes him so much more difficult to hit because
it's unhittable.
It's unhittable. It's an unhittable pitch. A 98 mile an hour fastball on the black on the outside of the plate is impossible. All you can do is hope to foul it off if you even can see it. Yeah. And he's got that little bit of a run on his fastball where it does have some good natural movement to it where it's even harder to pick up. So I was really encouraged with what I saw. He obviously, lost the strike zone in the sixth inning a little bit, but he looked really good. He looked really good, and it was a good bounce back start against the Rays at home.
Yeah, he has not exceeded 100 pitches. I think he had 99 in the Toronto start, if I remember correctly. And he had 97.
Did he not get 100 yesterday? It was damn close.
97.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously there's no difference, but like you said, he was starting to lose the strike zone in the sixth inning. But like as the number five starter, if you're into the sixth inning at 97 pitches, like you take that every day of the week.
100%. And even at the end, you could see when he walked that first guy, I don't know if it's the release point where he loses confidence in, but it tends to come in bunches too, because he walked two guys in a row. Clearly the confidence was shaken with where he believes the ball is going to go. And that's the thing, like for him to be able to finish these starts off, it's about controlling and limiting the problems. And if you're walking a guy, being able to bounce back, and maybe there's just fatigue. And that was why he had a long first inning, and that's what got his pitch count up, because he was pretty economical for the rest of the game until he walked those last two guys. But I think he hit, it was a 20, 23, 25, something like that in that first inning. And then, you know, it didn't help matters where the catcher's interference call on a strikeout that would have ended the inning, you know, brought him back out to throw a few more pitches. To his credit, he struck him out.
He didn't let, when he balked in the run, he didn't let that derail his start either.
Right.
Because that was a balk.
It's more about him, and the strike zone is where I'm seeing the confidence issues. Like he has a harder time. I'm not saying he's not able to do it, because we've seen him be able to do it on occasions, but he definitely spirals when he loses the strike zone, and he's got to be able to, you know, re-find that release point. It is mechanical. Jeff Nelson was doing a really good job talking about, you know, his elbow dipping, how, you know, his staying behind the ball, and like that's it. Like sometimes his balance is a little bit, he's a little too fast with his mechanics, and he rushes things. And when you see that, the arm is not able to get to the same release point. But when he's staying back and being able to control, you know, his weight transfer, you start to see a lot more good things. And for him, it's about being disciplined enough to stay in those good mechanics, you know, at the times when you realizing that you're flying out a little bit. And that's kind of the evolution of him, I think, is what we're going to see is him being able to get back and find those mechanics after he gets a little loose with them on certain occasions.
I thought Nelson's been really good this year.
He has.
He was in.
Has he done home games like this in the past? He's usually on away
games.
This
is his first year. No, yeah. He's been usually on like the Oakland West Coast trips with John Flaherty.
With Flaherty, yeah.
It's like, oh boy, this is going to be a long night. But he called one of Clark Schmidt's games earlier in the year and spent 5 minutes dissecting his mechanics and things that were going right and things that were going wrong. And as you know, someone who obviously is more in the nitty gritty of baseball, like I really appreciate it. I found it really interesting on the broadcast. And with the balk, it's like Boone comes out and argues the balk. Like, what is he arguing there? Like, that is a clear balk.
It's just Boone being Boone, man.
He just feels the need to argue.
Boone picks his moments to like defend his guys, quote unquote. And And that's him just like showing a young guy that he's, even if it's a clear buck, it's just, he does it on clear occasions when he knows that his guy is either struggling or did something. And he's just trying to take his side and make it very apparent that he's got his back.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah. Just prove he does he's that a player's manager. It's like, that was the balkiest of balks I've ever seen. Like, let's just move on. And to Hill's credit, like, he was like, yeah, I balked. Okay, I'm gonna strike the next guy out. It's like, let's go. So
yeah,
So quickly on the pitch mix. So Baseball Savant yesterday had Hill at 68% fastballs, 17% changeups, 14% sliders, but Brooks Baseball had him at 58% fastballs, 13% sliders, 27% changeups. So the big gap there is 10% lower fastballs, 10% more changeups on Brooks Baseball, whereas Baseball Savant had it more fastballs than changeups. And we were kind of chatting before the pod if this is how they're clocking these things, like how they're categorizing them, if it's just a velocity thing, if it's a movement thing. So we don't really have a clear answer there. I guess we're probably going to go with Baseball Savant because that does use StatCast data, and StatCast seems to be like the holy grail of advanced tracking data in Major League Baseball.
It also trends for what we saw. He was definitely riding his fastball more often, and the reason is because he was able to put it where he wanted to.
I'm wondering
if Luis Gil is able to locate that fastball and he's not throwing it a dominant amount of the time, a dominant percentage, then someone is doing him an injustice by calling other pitches.
Well, the thing, I mean, this is, I hope there's people out there screaming like, hey, idiots, what do you say about Carlos Rodon? The complete opposite, where Luis Gil has basically been a two-pitch pitcher, fastball and then something else. So,
yeah, but he's also showing other things. He's got a changeup and he does have a slider. But Luis Gil's fastball is better than Carlos Rodon's fastball. Like, just bottom line, stuff wise, it's a better pitch. He's got late movement, and you know, it's just more of an electric fastball. It is. So there's a difference. Not every fastball is made the same, and not every fastball should be judged.
Rodon's fastball is pretty good though.
Like, he's got a good fastball. But Luis Gil has a plus fastball.
Yes.
Like, his stuff is there.
Yes.
Even Nelson was talking about this, like. And I'm glad he said that too, because I totally agree. I think next to Gerrit Cole, Luis Gil has got the best stuff in this rotation.
I mean, you want to say like just stuff wise, like Gil might have better stuff than Gerrit Cole. He can't sniff him as a starting pitcher, as a pitcher.
Right.
Like, Gerrit Cole obviously has that. He has more pitches. Gerrit Cole has more good pitches. He has three good pitches, maybe even four good pitches, whereas Gil has one good pitch. But like, if you're just saying like stuff wise, like, I don't know, you can't find much better stuff than Luis Gil's fastball.
No, the fastball is electric. It really is. Now, if he's able to control it, that's the biggest thing.
So I was just wondering if maybe because some of his changeups are at like 91 miles an hour, if those just aren't clocking as changeups, or if they are, you know, it's because his fastball and changeup, even though it is still like a 6-7 mile an hour difference at some points. They can kind of creep together because he was throwing some fastballs at like 94, 95 yesterday and some changeups at 90, 91. Like, that is kind of, it's pretty close.
Yeah, no, I agree. Brooks Baseball might be categorizing their pitches in a different way.
There's a few more things I want to touch on before we wrap up, but whether you are a world-class athlete or a podcaster like us, we understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of EE System, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the New York City area or hundreds of other locations across the globe, a center is easy and affordable. Access to a center is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/Bronx to learn more and find a center near you. That is spelled UNIFYD, unifiedhealing.com/Bronx. No material or testimonial on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime, including EE System. couple more things to touch on. The bullpen, like, I don't know what else we can say about it. Like, yesterday, they barely survived that game because Holmes had already pitched two in a row. And they
Nick Birdie hits the IL. So we got guys still dropping like flies. Canely, who knows when he's going to be back. You know, seems like it's a little bit delayed.
And like the Victor Gonzalez, if he doesn't make a game saving play there with the backhand stop and the flop,
it was a hell of a play.
It was a hell of a play.
To be honest, if there's anybody I'm gaining a lot more confidence in, it's Victor Gonzalez. Like he's you know, maybe I hadn't given him enough credit for what he'd done in his career as well, but he does feel like a guy that has that type of intensity, that does have enough of a pitch mix and has been getting guys out to in a good clip. Caleb Ferguson, on the other hand, not instilling confidence at all.
Although, it's impossible to say anything negative about Juan Soto, but that double in the gap, what kind of route was that that Juan Soto took to that? Like, he ran straight over to the ball, had no chance at it, went 12 feet over his head. Like, what are you doing?
Wasn't a great route. The reason the guy on second base held up because he thought the ball was going to be caught as well.
Yeah, I thought the ball was going to be caught.
So did I. Yeah, it wasn't a great route. I'm sure he'd mention that as well. But yeah, still a hard hit ball. I don't know. Caleb Ferguson just ain't doing it for me.
And if Gonzalez yesterday doesn't slap that ball down, that is an easy out because the guys are up the middle like that. That is a ground ball fielded by probably the second baseman at Gleyber at that point, and that's an easy out. So when
it looked
he
so much
down,
better though the way he did it.
You know, but when he knocked it down, I'm like, oh god, there's no chance. He's not the runner's going to beat this out, and this inning's going to keep going. He hustled, belly flop.
He hustled, man. See, that's the type of shit you got to get. You throw out some zeros. And then you do that type of stuff. Okay, now we're talking. Now you're on my radar as a guy who maybe I can who can start to trust and look forward to a little bit more.
Do you know what he also did that a lot of players make a mistake? He used his bare hand to scoop the ball and flip the ball, not his glove. A lot of guys will try and scoop it and flip it with their glove, and the ball goes wild because it's hard to do that with your glove. So he did it with his bare hand, which you have obviously more control over.
You have more control over it. It's less of a percentage to grip it cleanly, but that's not an easy play to be able to grip it and then you know, kind of shovel it off. But it was nice. He made it look easy.
Another thing, finally, that I want to touch on. I forgot to bring this up from the Toronto series because I think it was more evident in the Blue Jays series where they ran all over the Yankees on the base path. Just the Yankees pitchers in general just don't seem to be good at holding runners. And I know it's hard to get on catchers at this point for allowing stolen bases because of the rules kind of stacked against them at this point. But it seems like the Yankees pitchers just do not pay enough attention to the
It's
runners.
It's also difficult for the pitchers to do it as well. I mean, I think some of these numbers that we're seeing across the league and how you can the numbers and how you hold them on and their percentage on guys stealing bases, it's just going to continue to elevate. The floor is going to get higher because it's hard to hold guys on right now. It just is. You can only throw over X amount of times. Guys are going to take more leads, and as they you know get used to this more and more, it's going to be exploited more, which is a good thing for the game. It's fun to watch, but yeah, and
it's frustrating when it's happening to your team because it's a very helpless feeling.
What I'm surprised that we don't see more of are catchers throwing down to first base more often. I thought we would have seen a lot more
of
that.
Jose Molina.
Yeah, well, I mean that's a way that's not being. You know, you're not counting that as a way to as a throwover.
That's not a pickoff attempt, correct?
I know, but it's a way to keep a guy a little bit more honest at first base. Because if he's taking a giant lead and you're snap throwing it down to first base, you're putting another thought in his head where he can't take that big secondary lead as much as he can because he's already starting off the bag, you know, a couple feet further. Because you might get hosed at first, and that never looks good.
Well, it's going to be hard to host somebody at first when Jose Trevino's arm strength is 70.9 miles an hour, which is 62nd out of 62nd out of 62 catchers this year. So last in arm strength in throwing speed. And then Austin Wells is 78.7 miles an hour, ranks middle of the pack, 38 out of 62.
Yeah, the guys that don't have a ton of arm strength are praying that robo umps do not come, because the framing is
Trevino
is really
would
keeping
be
them
a lot less valuable. Yeah. Yeah. And then suddenly Gary Sanchez would be back in high demand.
Is he still playing baseball? Is he in Milwaukee?
Yeah, I guess. Good so. For him. He's a member of the Brew Crew. What are your thoughts on Ben Rortvedt? Look, hitting 330, 900 OPS for Tampa, because of course he is.
I expect, what I think about Ben Rortvedt is that April will be the best month he's ever seen at the plate. That's what I think.
You're probably right, but it still stings a little bit. Like, listen.
It doesn't sting for me.
A little bit.
He's not a good hitter.
He's not a good hitter. That's why it stings.
Yeah. Well, I know the other shoe's going to drop for him. Yeah, yeah. It's going to come around. We caught him when his stats looked nice. Let's see what happens the next time. It's most likely not going to be there.
Yeah, it's annoying when Tampa rolls into Yankee Stadium and up on the scoreboard, Ben Rortvedt's average says 330. Yeah, that's annoying. Okay, sorry. And our catcher's batting average say 073.
The Rays, speaking of like what was a little different to me, that the discipline on the base path for them, not there. And it looked, you're just not used to seeing, you know, undisciplined Rays teams as much as we saw this, this past week, but they did not run the bases at all. And they ran out of innings, fielding errors. They're in last place.
I mean, they're in last place for
last place is still pretty good in the AL East though, comparatively across the league. So the whole division is playing pretty well.
They are. And there's obviously the Red Sox are a bit of a surprise team in that. It's a highly competitive division. We knew it was going to be a highly competitive division. Baltimore has been on fire. They're a half game behind the Yankees. So.
The Holiday Kid's not hitting.
No, but aren't they like 8-1 since he got called up or something?
Yeah, he's not really helping, but maybe he's just the magic of him being there.
I feel like his dad will sit him down, have a talk.
He needs to shave his head.
All right. That's going to wrap it up for today's episode. A bit of a shorter one because we do have that weird afternoon Monday game. So listen to this as a pregame. The Yankees Monday afternoon game against Oakland. Man, I can't imagine there's going to be a lot of people. Can imagine. It's a nice day here. I can't imagine there's going to be a lot of people there against the A's on a Monday at 1 o'clock.
Well, you could probably get a pretty cheap ticket. So
yeah, go check out Game Time. Get in for like $3. All right, we'll be back
again. Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens. And that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.